the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon here on the Big 550 KTRS. I am Paul Harris. Ian and Dan are here with me in the studio. And we're joined now by two guys who call themselves the Minimalists, Joshua Milburn and Ryan Nicodermus. Did I pronounce the...
Close.
Nicodemus.
Nicodemus.
Yeah.
See, I wrote it down, and it looked like there was an R in there. This is what I was saying before about the handwriting.
Yes.
I'm sorry. Ryan Nicodemus and Joshua Milburn, the Minimalists. Here's what I know about you guys. You used to be living the pretty good life, and then you decided, we're not happy. Let's get rid of stuff.
Yeah, you know, I was living the American dream. I had everything I ever wanted. By age 27, I was the youngest director in my company's 140-year history in Cincinnati. And I had all the trappings of success, the six-figure salary, the luxury cars, big house with more bedrooms than people, appliances, clothes, furniture, all the stuff in my life. And then two events happened to me. My marriage ended and my mother died, both in the same month.
Ooh,
and I looked around and I realized where I'd placed all my life's energy, all my focus was on so-called achievements and the accumulation of all of these possessions. And so I started questioning the things in my life, and I realized that most of the stuff that I had owned was not actually adding value to my life. So I spent about 8 months radically paring down my life and simplifying, questioning each object, asking, does this thing add value to my life? And I got rid of about 90% of my stuff over the course of 8 months, and I started feeling freer and happier and lighter. And then I discovered that I was a minimalist. There was apparently this whole community of people who were living these different lifestyles, but they were living more deliberately, more intentionally.
Stuff as a burden? Is that the idea?
You know, I don't think there's anything wrong. This is Ryan speaking, by the way, for the listeners. There's nothing wrong with owning stuff. There's nothing wrong with consuming. Where I ran into an issue is when I was compulsively consuming. You know, my focus was on having a better job title. My focus was on having a nicer car. It was on having a bigger house. It was, focused on going on the next big vacation or networking with the right people to get deeper into the community. I was working 60, 70, 80 hours a week. And as much as I earned, I was spending even more money, which that equation never works, by the way.
No, it doesn't.
No.
Now, the credit card companies like that equation. That's how they stay in business.
Right.
Yeah.
And it just got to a point where I didn't know what was important anymore, because I did have everything I ever wanted. If you were to tell my 18-year-old self what my 28-year-old self was going to have, I would have been the most excited 18-year-old. Like, wow, I'm going to be so happy when I'm 28.
Mm-hmm.
But instead of happy, I was stressed out. I was unhealthy. I was several years divorced. I was miserable. And I just, like I said, didn't know what was important anymore. And I saw this noticeable difference in Josh. We've known each other since we were fat little fifth graders.
Wow.
And he seemed really happy. And we were both working at the same corporation, side by side. And I didn't understand why he was so happy, because he was just as miserable as me. And I went to him and I'm like, dude, what's going on with you, man? Did they put you on like some Prozac or something? why are you so happy? And he told me about this thing called minimalism. And I thought, okay, I've known Josh for over 20 years. I know he's not crazy. If this has worked for him, maybe I can give it a shot. Maybe I can try it out. So, yeah, he introduced me to an entire community of people who were living these deliberate, meaningful lives, people from different backgrounds, different work situations, kids, families, all that stuff. And I thought, okay, I'm not going to be able to like mimic any of these people's lives specifically, but I can certainly tweeze out different ingredients from these different examples and apply them to my own life. I said, okay, I'll try this minimalist thing out.
All right. So Josh, how minimal is minimal? What do you have?
Everything I own serves a purpose or brings me joy. I think if you came to my house right now, I live in Montana now, but if you came to my house, you wouldn't leap up and say, oh my gosh, Josh is a minimalist.
Mm-hmm.
You'd probably walk in there and say, he's kind of tidy. Because everything I own is there, and it serves a purpose or it brings me joy. So my couch or my bed or my desk or my kitchenware, all the stuff that I have, I actually has a function. My car has a function, and everything else that was superfluous, I got out of the way. And I think that changes over time as our own situations change. So my flavor of minimalism will look different from Ryan's, it would look different from yours, so forth and so on. It's about what adds value to my life specifically, and it's a highly individual question.
Ryan, what was the hardest thing to get rid of?
The hardest thing to get rid of? That would be my identity, because I associated my identity with all of those things.
No, I'm talking a material thing. Come on.
Material possessions?
Yeah.
I can't think of one specific item. I can tell you what I did that was really difficult, but I had to do it because I really needed to change my perspective on how I was pursuing my life. We came up with this idea called a packing party, where I packed all my belongings up in my 2,000 square foot condo, 3 bedrooms, 2 bathrooms, 2 living rooms. I have no idea why a single guy needs 2 living rooms.
Yeah.
But he had a cat.
Yeah. So we packed everything up. Josh came over and helped me. Packed everything up. Took about 9 hours. It was exhausting. But I'll tell you, it was really interesting. I basically unpacked things as I needed it for the next 21 days.
Well, this sounds like everybody who's ever moved.
Yeah, right?
Right.
I mean,
whenever
you move from one place to another, you go, why do I still have that?
Yeah. He was pretending as if he was moving.
Right.
Because that's like the best. Because you realize every time you pack stuff up, you have all these boxes left over. You're like, what the heck is even in that box? I don't know what's in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We do have a box in the basement of our house that has no label on it, and I have no idea what's in there.
The mystery box.
But we've lived there for 15 years, and apparently whatever it was, we didn't need that.
Yeah.
I think everybody is like that, right?
Yeah,
right.
Definitely.
I should mention that Josh and Ryan are on a 100-city tour across America, and they're here in St. Louis this afternoon because they're going to be making an appearance tonight at Left Bank Books down on North 10th Street promoting their latest book, their second book, called Everything That Remains, which is after you get rid of all those boxes, it's everything that remains that gives you the life you wanted?
Yeah, absolutely. After those 21 days where I unpacked things as I needed it from that packing party, I had everything that remained. It was about 80% of my stuff still packed in boxes. And that's really where our website started, was with that story. TheMinimalists.com started with that 21 days.
Did you guys go on like Craigslist or eBay and sell the stuff?
Some of it. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I found ways to, because I realized that the stuff that wasn't adding value to my life, it may add value to someone else's life. If I'm just sitting in my basement or that spare bedroom that has become a junk room, I realized that, okay, I'm not getting any value from it, but someone else can. Or some of the stuff that I sold, I was able to actually get value monetarily from the stuff that I sold on Craigslist or eBay or wherever else, and then use that money for other things, specifically in my case, to pay down debt, because I had massive amounts of debt that I was trying to pay off. Spent about 4 years becoming debt-free.
That's the material part of you that took over your life for a while, right?
Amen. Yeah, it definitely was. I was accumulating. And I don't think there's anything wrong with consumption. The problem in my life was compulsory consumption, buying things because that's what I was supposed to do. I thought that purchasing things was going to make me happy. And then I realized the more and more I purchased, I was trying to fill this void in my life. But it never filled the void. It just got wider. And the farther I traveled toward happiness, the farther away happiness was. And I felt overwhelmed. I felt stressed out by the stuff in my life. And I realized that it wasn't actually making me
so happy. As you minimalized your lives, and I'll ask both of you to answer this, you started becoming popular with this. I mean, these guys have like more than 2 million followers on Twitter and Facebook, and there's almost a cult of followers for these guys. I hate to use that word for you because it has such negative connotations, but there are people who are kind of saying, oh, well, you know what, I need to do that with my life too. Have you met other people who went a little bit too extreme on the minimalist side, and where you went to them, I couldn't do without that?
Yeah, you know, I think there are quite a few people in the minimalist movement. Like, the first guy that I ran across is a guy named Colin Wright. He was this young entrepreneur who was traveling to a new country every 4 months. Everything he owned, he fit in a backpack. And he took pictures of all his stuff one time. He owned 51 items. And I thought, wow, that's crazy.
His entire life was 51 items.
I'm like, oh my gosh, I have more than 51 items in my junk drawer, before I simplified my life. And what I learned was there was this other community of people, there's a guy named Leo Babalta who lives in San Francisco, and he has 6 kids. Now, clearly, he has more than 51 items.
Right.
And so what I learned is a lot of these minimalists, they pare down to far less than I will ever own, but it's because it serves their lifestyle. A lot of people like to travel all over the world, but I don't have a desire to be a peripatetic traveler, writer, or whatever. I kind of like having a house and a kitchen table and, you know, plates and dishes and stuff. And so what I learned is there are all these different flavors of minimalism, and my flavor is my own. And these other people who might live a more radical lifestyle, I don't have a desire to own only 51 items. But I think it's kind of cool that some people can experiment with that.
Like the 100-square-foot homes that people are building.
Yeah. We're shooting a documentary right now, and we just we went to one of those tiny homes, a woman in California named Tammy Strobel, and she has a tiny house. And it was really beautiful and cool. It's not a place where I would want to live, but I thought it was really neat that this thing called minimalism allowed her to pursue that smaller lifestyle in her own way.
Ever since you guys have, again, popularized this, you're not necessarily the leaders of this, but certainly you're the most visible minimalists who are out there with books and working on a movie and what website and all the social media stuff. Who's come on board more, men or women?
You know, the demographic is all over the place. We have had men and women equally show up at our events. We had a 13-year-old boy bring his mother the other day in Omaha. We've had...
All right, well, now, hold on a second. Let's explore this. He brings mom because he thinks mom has too much stuff?
Well, I asked him how it happened, and he said his dad gave him our first book, Minimalism, Live a Meaningful Life. And he said he read it. He really liked it. He saw that we were going to be in town, and he asked his mom to bring him to the event. So I don't know if he necessarily went to his mom and said, hey, mom, you need to be a minimalist. But,
no, I'm guessing that mom probably said to him, you know what? I agree. Minimalism is a good idea.
Yeah.
You have no more TV. You have no more phone. Because all those things that we bought you, we're more than happy to give them to somebody else if you don't want them.
Yeah.
See how the 13-year-old reacts to that.
Right, right. No, you know, I do want to say that minimalism is not just about the stuff. That was the initial bite of the apple for Josh and I. I mean, I promise you that you or any of your listeners could go home and rent a dumpster and throw away every single thing that you own and still be very miserable. It's possible. Yeah. In fact, probably so. You know, for us, it was really about getting the clutter out of the way to really figure out what was truly important. And what that led us to was focusing on our health, focusing on relationships, focusing on things that we're passionate about, focusing on growing as human beings. I mean, every single one of us in the world have this desire to grow. And when we get caught in that 9-to-5, living for the weekends, living for those extra hours in the evening, and we don't do anything to help ourselves grow, we can really, you know, feel discontented. And, you know, Josh and I, we do that through contribution and going around and doing these tours and talking to people.
Is that what you guys do now for a living? You don't work at a factory or you don't work anywhere else?
Yeah, well, we're both entrepreneurs now. I teach a writing class, and Ryan does some mentoring stuff. We've been fortunate enough to do really well with two books. When I walked away from the corporate world, though, the reason I did that, because I don't think there's anything wrong with working a 9-to-5. I think we all have to pay the bills. I realized what I was doing previously didn't align with my values or my beliefs. And now everything that I do, whether it's this 100-city tour, which we actually lose money on going on a book tour, but it's a message we really believe in. And it's a message that we've seen change our lives personally, but we've also seen it change the lives of thousands of other people. And we're not out trying to proselytize. We're not trying to convert anyone to minimalists. I don't even think you can do that. But what we're trying to do is share a recipe that works for us and say, hey, if you can find an ingredient or two that you can tweeze out and apply to your own life, then great, we all win. Because I think ultimately there's a platitude, but it's kind of deep. Giving is living.
So is the minimal version of a book tour two guys in a smart car staying in hostels?
You kind of described it fairly well.
Really?
Yeah, it's not hostels. We usually stay with a lot of readers. And we've been really fortunate. We like to call it a tour bus, but it's a Toyota Corolla. It's 12 years old.
It's got about 200,000 miles on it.
That does not qualify as a tour bus.
It sounds fancier, though, when you call it a tour bus.
Yes, it does.
Yeah. But no,
right after the appearance that I had at Left Bank Books, people are going to follow you outside. Hey, where's your tour bus? Right over there. That's it?
Wow.
You guys are minimal.
Toyota with Montana plates. That's us.
And you mentioned relationships, Josh. I'm curious about the attractiveness of this to members of the opposite sex. And on top of that, what happens if you fall for a woman who's a maximalist?
Well, you know, people ask me this all the time. Like, so how is it now dating as a minimalist? And I'll tell you, it's a lot easier because I do things so much more deliberately now, where, you know, before when I was in the corporate world and when I only had a few hours to meet a woman or whatever, it was very, I was pursuing very ephemeral things, where now I'm more deliberate. And when I date someone, or when I bring even a friend into my life, I make sure that we have the same values and beliefs. So I don't think I would ever fall for a maximalist woman. Not that there's anything wrong with being a maximalist either. I guess you got to balance it out somehow. But, you know, I wouldn't really pursue a relationship with someone who didn't have the same values and beliefs that I do. So it's a lot easier for me.
So you're like a lot of other guys, where you would meet somebody and realize pretty soon, too high maintenance.
How many shoes do you need?
Right.
Yeah. It's funny. I learned a lesson. My favorite line from the new book actually is, you can't change the people around you, but you can change the people around you. And once I realized that at an emotional level, I realized that, okay, who I surround myself with is really important. And as Ryan said, it's important to surround yourself with people who are like-minded, or what I like to say is open-minded, because like Ryan and I have radically different personalities. People I date, women I may date, may have radically different personality, but if we have similar values, similar ethics, then you know we have these commonalities. We have this foundation upon which we can build a really great relationship.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just going to warn you here, as a guy who's been married for a long, long time, things may seem minimal at the beginning, but at a certain age, the shoe thing kicks in with women, and all of a sudden, that's the maximalization of your life. What do you mean I don't have any more room in this closet? Yeah.
And the sales at JCPenney's.
Josh and Ryan are going to be at Left Bank Books tonight with their new book called Everything That Remains. Are you doing a presentation, or is it so minimal people just have to wander in and figure out who you are?
No, I'll talk for about 15 minutes. Josh will read. We'll do some question and answers, and then we'll have a little book signing. The event lasts about an hour and a half to 2 hours.
And they're also online at theminimalists.com. Mm-hmm. Nice to meet you guys. Thanks for coming in here.
Thanks so much for having us.
Welcome to St. Louis.
Yeah, thank you.
This is the Big 550 KTRS.